at the Hot Stove Society, owner of many of Seattle's fine restaurants. I'm joined by my cohort in crime,
the chef in hat, Thierry Rotureau, owner of Luc in Madison Valley and Lule downtown Seattle.
And Katie O. That's right.
I work the voice of the radio.
I work at Hum Creative down in Pioneer Square, but also I like to moonlight on this show and co-host with the two of you.
We're going to make a meal today out of what's left over in your fridge. This isn't just about a fully stocked fridge. The idea really is, what are the things in there that are sitting in there, and you think, God, I got to go to the grocery store for dinner, and I think, well, I can make something out of this.
Yeah.
That's kind of the whole
idea.
Let's
get resourceful.
Our favorite tips on grilling this summer. I wrote a whole article about this for Alaska Airlines Magazine and for Fine Cooking Magazine coming out in the July issue. I wrote an article on cooking fish on your outdoor grill, so get a copy of that.
Yeah.
5 pages long.
5 pages?
Beautiful pictures. From my grill at home.
Yeah, and you know, I really like your tip on the asparagus because I actually read it when I was going to Hawaii.
You read my asparagus article?
Yeah, because you talk about it on the show.
So
I was like,
sweet.
Oh, Tom wrote an article in here. I forgot about it, and I saw it. I was like, oh, let me read this. You know, the article about debunking the banning the asparagus.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, it's very, very cool.
You know what's funny about that? I do talk about how just peel the end of the asparagus, cut off a chunk, and then see if it's tender or not, and just keep working your way back.
Right.
And typically the whole bunch would kind of mirror each other.
Mm-hmm.
So I did that for Evening Magazine on my I have a segment on Evening Magazine often. And so I did that on the air, and I took my first bite of the end of it and literally almost choked to death on the, on the air because I tried to talk too soon after taking that little bite to test it. But anyway,
that was
behind the scenes.
That is a bit of a special technique that you have to master as someone that is both cooking, eating, and trying to explain something on television. How quickly to eat that bite, or are you just going to save it in your little cheek like a squirrel?
Well, I was on the air, so it was like I didn't really want to spit it out at that point.
Right.
Because my point is you start at the end and you work your way up,
uh-huh.
right? And so I started at the end, and the end was not edible. But then here I am, camera, like
saying that it is.
So I'm trying to swallow it, and then it's all of a sudden, no, this is a bad
what
idea.
What a mess.
Cut. Retake. Of course, we're going to go toe-to-toe on food trivia at the end of our two-hour show, so you have to hang with us for that. But first, let's jump into Ordinary to Extraordinary.
Yes, this is some ordinary dishes, and you're going to make them extraordinary with all your know-how. The first thing that we're going to do, I like that we're starting to look at these national holidays for food things.
Mm-hmm.
There's pretty much a national holiday for every single food item. But
yeah, which would mean like there's 10 a day because there's a lot of food
compared
to a lot of days.
A lot of food and a lot of days. But on May 19th is Devil's Food Cake Day. How do you make an extraordinary Devil's Food Cake?
Just like Grandma. That was always my favorite. My grandma made a delicious little Devil's Food Cake with just a sweet kind of white icing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it tastes
and
like sugar.
Sprinkles
it
on top.
It tastes like sugar.
Awesome.
Sprinkles are really what make Devil's Food Cake for
mm-hmm.
me.
Jimmy's. I think we call them Jimmy's.
Jimmy's?
Yeah. I think cherries are coming in season. Just throw in some cherries in the pan quickly and then cook them down a little
mm-hmm.
bit. And then put them right on top of your angel food cake with some beautiful whipped cream and a little julienne basil. And you'll have a wonderful angel food cake.
Mm, it sounds good. Almost like a black forest,
yeah.
But with
basil,
it's a little bit different.
A little bit different. A little bit extraordinary. Let's talk enchiladas. Let's talk extraordinary enchiladas.
Mm-hmm.
Tom?
Got to go with fresh corn tortillas, number one. That'll take a step up. Then I would say what I feel like most people don't do, like a green enchilada, where it's really just pork. A lot of people just kind of settle at pork and cheese in the enchilada and
mm-hmm.
then do the green sauce on top.
Mm-hmm.
I think you really have to char those vegetables, right? If you want it extraordinary, you start up the charcoal grill, char your onion, char your tomatillo, char your Anaheim pepper. Really get a nice...
Give them a nice... A nice flavor,
and you know, just put onion rings right on the grill and let them get up dark and brown, and you will be shocked at the difference at the end of the day when you sit down to the bite at the table. You're going to taste so much more depth in that enchilada.
And a good amount of chopped cilantro at the end.
Yeah, absolutely, or
fresh
avocado
herbs.
Salsa or whatever it is that you want. But the point is, at the end, it tastes what it tastes like. The avocado, the cilantro, that is
correct.
But
garnish.
when you're eating what you built that enchilada out of, That's when you want to make a difference. That's right. When you can go from ordinary to extraordinary.
I would agree. I would agree. Just having made a homemade chili pork verde sort of situation, it called for all those ingredients, and it really does make a huge difference to just take the extra time to char those items and peel them and then make your
sauce.
And
the leftovers are going to taste a lot better, too.
That's right.
I want to go back to your sort of situation because I have a daughter not too much younger than you, and this whole word situation is coming up more and more often. And it's one thing to be in a situation, but another entirely to be in a sort of situation.
A sort of
so
situation.
So I'm just curious. Like, were you on the verge of a situation? Were you situationally sensitive?
I think honestly, I'm just being a lazy talker right now.
Okay. I'm
saying
there
is
a difference. Okay.
No, there's no specificity on that. Okay, the next one really quick, polenta. An extraordinary polenta.
Extraordinary polenta.
Well, it's all about the cheese. It's all about cooking your polenta, not too much, to a mush, you know, so you can have actually texture to your polenta. Still a little texture to your corn and good cheese, fresh herbs, and that's it. I mean, you have to keep it simple. And then after that, you can put some sauteed mushroom right on top of that. You can do all kind of things you can add to it. But the polenta itself, I'm a little bit of a purist when it gets down to that.
And I would say it's really fun to make a tray of polenta and then maybe use some cookie cutters. When I first opened the Dahlia, almost 30 years ago now, I had a galaxy of polenta on my appetizer list. And I made moon shapes, sun shapes, star shapes.
Stop it.
I did.
Like Jell-O jigglers, but like... But
yes,
like polenta.
Yes.
I guess I don't know what Jell-O... Is that a situation
yes.
I should... Is that a situation I should be aware of?
No, I'll...
Or just
we'll
sort of?
We'll explore... Just no, you, sort
you,
of
you,
a situation.
You can stay out of that
anyway,
situation.
I would put them on the grill, and I grilled up my galaxy of polenta, and then put, like, there's a little mushroom, like chanterelle gravy on top or something like that.
That sounds nice.
Yeah.
I'm really liking this idea. Very extraordinary dishes, gentlemen.
Don't tell me you're not going to steal my galaxy idea.
I'm going to go home tonight and make a galaxy of polenta.
What's up with brie rind? How long can cheddar sit out? This is a very cheesy education for you. Next on Cairo Radio, 97.3 FM. We're back in the Seattle kitchen. I'm Chef Tom Douglas.
And I'm Terry Rocher, the chef in hat.
And I'm Katie O.
Katie, we have this question fairly often, I would say, on this show. Mm-hmm. I've got some cheese in my fridge. It's got a little something-something action on it.
It's looking a little ripe.
It's looking a little ripe. It's some green edge, some white edge.
I think I've definitely had this question for the both of you. I had some beautiful Comté not that long ago, and I was like, dang it, you spend so much money on this cheese because you get excited when you see that beautiful cheese section at the grocery store, and then sometimes you just can't get through it all, and then you forget that you have it sometimes, and then you see the mold. And so you wonder to yourself, is this salvageable? What can I do
You
with
wonder
this?
Or you don't. I don't wonder. I just take the mold out and use the cheese.
And so that's all you do?
That's
simply
all I do.
Just take a... It doesn't matter what kind of cheese. Like, even
wait,
if it was...
Wait. No. We're talking about Comté with mold on it. That's all I'm saying.
Okay.
I would take, I mean, unless this thing is like 6 months old, which, by the way, I'm going to slap you on the hand for having cheese 6 months old in your refrigerator.
Mm-hmm.
You should use that before that. But if you have cheese that's a couple of weeks old, like Comté, in your refrigerator, I take the knife and I just take the mold out.
It right off.
And then use the Comté.
Is that always true, though? So Comté is one thing. It's already an aged cheese. There's a mold kind of going on with it. But let's say you have a fresh cheese, like a Chèvre, or something that's a little bit more wet, and you see mold in that.
That is not something you keep. That's something you throw away.
There we go.
Yeah.
I would not. I would
if
just
you have
off.
Fresh...
Just like cream cheese, I would just scrape off the mold and eat what's underneath. Personally.
I'm with you, too, but I'm not going to say that on the radio.
But I think,
believe you just did, Chef.
Exactly.
I think that's
exactly. I'm trying to explain between the lines.
What people want to know, though, because you do have plenty of advocates out there of, like, do not do this thing because you will get sick or you're risking illness, which, you know, I think that information is out there. But I think what a lot of people want to know from professional chefs is, like, well, What have you experienced? What do you actually eat? Are you scared of eating those things? It sounds like, no, it's not something that you would necessarily want people to follow, but with your own lives at stake,
let's clarify,
your own stomach at stake.
With your own life at stake, are you the type of person that's going to go to the ballpark and have nachos with some non-dairy spread over top that's been homogenized like crazy, is going to line your arteries, and it's going to kill you?
Yes. Yes,
exactly.
I'm feeling like you're
but
really
you're
putting me on
person,
the spot.
You're the same person that's going to worry about scraping a little mold off of cheese from your own darn refrigerator.
No, I just want to make sure it's okay. I'm not too worried about it.
You're eating cheese out of a can that comes out of a spray top.
Yeah, I'm
called Whiz. Called Whiz.
Yeah, but
you know what Whiz is,
Tom, science,
right?
Tom. Science has made things such
Tom,
that it's a safe
That's not
product.
Cheese, though. That's not cheese. She's talking about real cheese.
I'm talking about real cheese.
Well, it can be.
I think the fear that people have is when they see mold, they think if something has gone bad. And mold isn't just a process of aging. And in cheese, it's actually part of aging cheese.
Okay. Let's talk about another thing having to do with cheese. So a lot of people, when they're entertaining, want to put out the cheese platter. It's a very lovely, welcoming way to kind of gather around and nosh while you socialize. How long can that cheese stay out and still be good? So, like, if I have a party, and let's say that party lasts for 5 hours.
Mm-hmm.
I would put that cheese back in the fridge afterwards if it wasn't all gone, if it's been out for 5 hours, if it's enough to be salvageable.
I would look at it and think, I'm going to have a cheese omelet in the morning, and I'll just leave it there till I get up.
Yeah, so you'd be fine with it staying out overnight.
Yeah, sure.
It depends on how much cheese you have left over, too. I mean, if you have seven different kinds of cheeses and they're all left over by, a pound of each, obviously you put that in the fridge because you're not going to be using it, but... Otherwise, I'm like, Tom, if you have just a little bit left over, just figure out what you're going to do in the next meal and use it.
You know, there's lots of ways to use bits. And, of course, you don't have to leave it out. You can pop it right back in your fridge.
Yeah.
It's not going to be a problem. But all those bits make great mac and cheese, right? So you have, like, five cheese mac and cheese with all the ends from your drawers.
Mm-hmm.
The things that you have to worry about in that scenario, for example, Brie is a mold-ripened cheese, like Camembert, right?
Yeah.
It's got mold all over the outside of it.
That's predominantly what
it
is.
And you don't take a wedge of Brie and then scoop out the creamy inside. You eat the whole thing, right?
Oh, yeah, I like how we're going into appropriate cheese eating. This is good.
Well,
if
you don't like it, don't eat it. That part is up to you, but you're throwing away real cheese.
You're actually throwing away the texture and the high flavor of the cheese.
On the other hand, if I have a little wedge of Brie that was only... three quarters eaten, say, and I've got the end piece with the mold still on the top, bottom, and the outside edge. If I'm going to make mac and cheese and take my cheese drawer and cut up everything, I'm going to cut that off. I don't want that chunk. It won't melt like the cheese part will.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't want that in my mac and cheese. So there's two ways of looking at that, Brie. But that's the reality. I'll do when it's cold. It's a lot easier to take that off when it's cold.
That's right. Yeah, so. I think you touched on a really great point. Back to the cheese platter at the party, is that I've been to quite a few parties. This is a very real issue where
nobody invites me anywhere.
Why is that?
Why do you get to go to all the parties?
And nobody ever.
Do you want to be my plus one to parties?
Sure.
We can go and tackle that cheese platter together. That's normally where I am.
And nobody makes cheese platter for me either. Probably because I like.
Okay. Well, we'll all gang up and go to parties from now on. But I'm with a bunch of heathens. But the Brie wedge. Where people really do truly scoop out the center. And then what you have on the cheese tray is like kind of everything's been picked at.
Yeah.
And then the sad shell of the exterior of the Brie. Can we just
see,
do a quick
PSA on
this?
See, if I go to that party, I'm going to eat that shell.
I'm not.
I think
you can
I'm
have
not
the curtains.
Either.
If all the center is taken and only the curtains left on that Brie... Forget it. I'm not touching it.
Do you think people do this, though, because they really genuinely don't like the taste? Or do you think it's because there's a misconception that they can't eat it?
Number two. Am I right?
I think it's not even a taste. I think it's a texture.
Yeah.
It's a textural thing.
So, but I do think it's, personally, if I were to go to a party and watch somebody scrape out the center of my cheese, I think it's a little bit rude.
Right?
Right. Why are you just not putting what I put out there?
Just put a little sign, Camembert, eat the whole thing.
That's like cherry picking to the next degree.
Just cherry picking, right? That's one thing if it's your own cheese at your own house and you're by yourself. But if you're with a group, you're taking the best part it's just not very hospitable.
That's right.
It's just not very neighborly.
That's right.
But for you to go in there and scrape out, I shouldn't even say the best part, but half the product and leave the other half what you don't like for the other everybody
it's
else.
It's like eating all the crab legs and leaving just the meat from the center and not eat that.
But part of the beauty of the brie is getting both of the textures, I think. And you know, you're robbing other people of that experience. So if you we only have a couple minutes, but if you were putting together the perfect little cheese tray, what would that look like?
I would start with a baked camembert. And this is the way you get around the rind part, because you put the whole camembert in a little brioche crust, and you bake the whole thing together, and people cannot get the rind off unless they're throwing away
and they
throw away
crust.
All the dough on the outside.
Everyone loves crust,
That's one way to get around.
You foiled the master plot of stealing the center of the cheese.
Oh, that's a nice way to get around that, that's for sure.
And then you move it around the room so that you can start a conversation about who moved your cheese.
I like it.
To answer your question, I would say think about the three different milk, sheep, goat, and cow.
Uh-huh.
And then think of texture and strengths of flavor, and that's how you should build your cheese tray, from soft all the way up to very hard.
I love it.
And don't forget, put a nice blue in there.
I agree. We're going to cook What's in Season next right here on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. All right, we're back in the Seattle kitchen. I'm Tom Douglas.
And I'm Terry Rotero, the chef in the hat.
And I'm Katie O.
And Katie, this week we're going to talk this whole segment about things that we are so looking forward to eating.
Yes.
Now that rhubarb season has finally waned a bit because, you know, we're so desperate for that rhubarb as the first sign of spring. We are in the thick of it now, thick of spring.
That's right.
Two-thirds of the way past, as a matter of fact. Soon to be summer, just 4 weeks away. Five weeks away.
Gosh, that feels fast. I don't know.
Maybe I'm... No, I'm a month off. One-third of the way into it.
You're a little too excited.
All I'm saying
is
that...
We're in the heart of spring.
Yeah, we're in the heart of spring. But what I'm saying is that from the farm, we're getting mustard greens, pea vines, all sorts of radishes, all sorts of things are finally here that we've been desperate for. And all we have to do now is just wrestle the sage rats to get our share. Because I really feel like it's their farm... And we just hope to get a share.
Yeah, that's their land.
Yeah.
You've built some things on it. They take a tax for you being there.
Like an 80% tax.
Like an 80% tax.
They're like King George.
And with the remaining 20%, you get to make something delicious. Mm-hmm.
I just don't feel like we get any representation for our tax. So I'm going to throw a tea party in Prosser.
Okay.
And pour hot tea down every sage rat hole.
That feels awfully cruel.
Yes, it
does. Yeah, that feels inhumane.
I'm surprised you have not come up with a dish yet with that kind of animal.
For a sage rat?
Yes.
You know, I'm surprised also, Chef. Because if you make a good point.
If you have that many, you know, it might be worth actually make friends with them.
Little braised sage rats.
I've tried to make. I talk to their holes all the time.
I'm pretty sure the language is different than, come here, I want to cook you.
So you're always really tapped into the seasons because you have that beautiful farm with your wife, Jackie, out in Prosser, Washington. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people, we don't have access to that necessarily, so we have to go to our farmers markets, which is a really great way to see what's in season, or do a little research so that we make sure that we're eating with the seasons and not against them necessarily.
Well, this is the perfect time for pea vines, right? Mm-hmm. So you just snip. There's lots of runners out there. You just snip the runners, and that's the pea vine. And they'll give for a couple months before it gets too hot, and they start getting woody.
Right.
So I made the other day stir-fried pea vines with garlic sauce, and then I did a pan-fried catfish on top. I made a little rub out of my Tokyo rub, and I added fermented black beans to it. So it was like a black bean rub.
Yum.
Which is a Tokyo rub is togarashi, or a little red chili, sesame, seaweed. A little dried orange peel, and fermented black beans. And so then I just did a sear on the catfish, put it on top of my garlic-fried pea vines.
That sounds pretty
special. Is the catfish from the Yakima River?
No. It was Mutual Fish bought catfish, so it's a farm-raised catfish. Mm-hmm. But it is really representative to me of a good... organic peasant food in a funny way, very Chinese in a way, and I just enjoy that kind of thing. And then when I did my little steamed rice on the side, which you have to have steamed rice with this, I put a star anise pod in it and a big coin of ginger, and it just perfumes the entire batch of rice so that you're not just eating plain rice.
That sounds delicious.
Yeah.
radishes, great time of the year to use radishes mm-hmm. in many different ways. You know, slice raw, finish as a little salad on top of a piece of fish, you know, or a piece of even a piece of meat. If you barbecue something, let's say a steak or pork chop, you know, it's nice to finish your dish with a nice little pickled salad or even just regular sliced salad, olive oil, salt, pepper, and then put that on the radishes in it. Let it macerate for about 15, 20 minutes and put that right on top of your piece of meat with some fresh peas or fava beans or, you know, things that are right in the heart of the season. Makes for a delicious little garnish.
You know, fava beans get this feeling like they're a spring vegetable, but they're really not. Unless you're eating the green parts, our favas don't really ripen until July.
Right. It's toward definitely the end of spring.
For
the
beginning bean itself. But you right. can eat the plant like you mm-hmm. do pea vines.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of us maybe have the common misconception that all the green pea-like items are ready to go in the springtime. So that includes the fava beans. That includes English peas. That mm-hmm. includes, you know, snap peas. All those things.
But you know what comes out towards the end of June or mid-June is the chickpeas, the fresh chickpeas.
Oh, yeah.
From Eastern Washington and Idaho. It's really beautiful stuff.
Those are so much of a pain to clean.
Oh, yeah, they are definitely.
And why are they a pain to clean for anyone that hasn't encountered it?
Each of the chickpeas has a little hood on it, almost like if you know what a tomatillo has, like that little paper wrapper
mm-hmm,
on it.
That's
well, fava, think of fava beans being one-tenth the size of a tomatillo with that same kind of paper wrapper on it. You got to take it off each and every one of them. It's just tedious. But it's worth it, I would mm-hmm. say. It's worth the effort.
Yeah, you just do a quick blanch, and it's much easier to use them that way. You know, mm-hmm. just very quick blanch in boiling water, and the skin comes right out.
Tom, you mentioned mustard greens. Can you talk about mustard greens for a bit here?
Mustard greens and chicories are one of the first things up in the spring because they're also one of the first things to go in the ground. Mm-hmm. They'll take the cold weather, or the cold earth.
And then the lion, too.
And germinate where other things won't. Because you have to have a certain earth temperature for things to germinate. I liked where Terry was going. You know, you do a big piece of grilled fish, and then I like a salad of herbs on top of that, right? So instead of, say, you're chopping the herbs and putting them into a butter sauce, I prefer taking that piece of grilled fish, putting it on whatever it's going with, whether it's pan-fried rice or some noodles or something. And then I'll take fennel fronds are out right now. Even mm-hmm. if you drive by the side of the road, you'll see big tufts of wild fennel growing, and that's certainly all edible. That tastes a little bit like car exhaust, but it's good. Leaves like that, right? Big
sure.
parsley leaves, fennel fronds, sliced radishes like Terry talked about. You could even cheat with some tarragon. I don't think you can find fresh tarragon yet, but you can find tarragon shoots,
mm-hmm.
Mint shoots, anything like that that you can do a whole leaf of, cilantro.
Yep.
That, to me, makes a beautiful salad with just a little bit of olive oil, a little bit of squeeze of lemon juice, and some big flake salt, like Maldon salt or something. Mm-hmm. Or even a little smoked salt would be nice in that. And then just put that whole salad on top of your grilled fish.
You can even do some fresh toasted almond sliced, you know, mm-hmm. and put that at the last minute in it. That also brings a little texture and as well as some sweetness to the dish.
Right. Best to be the thin sliced almonds, right?
Yeah, toasted. Very thin
sliced. So it doesn't. What you don't want is a wad of things on your fish, right?
Right.
That's why you have to be very careful with the olive oil, too, because it'll mat down your herbs.
Mm-hmm.
It can only just be a touch.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have a nice fluffy salad on top of your fish instead of just kind of this
heavy.
Weighted down, heavy, stringy salad, right?
Can we talk about spring meats for a second?
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
This is also a time where you start seeing spring lamb on menus. Maybe you see
rabbit.
Suckling. Is this a suckling pig time? When do we start seeing those items or spring meats that are generally associated with this time of year?
Well, our neighbors across the street from our farm just had 17 lambs.
Mm-hmm.
And I ended up getting two of them that were I don't want to gross people out, but one had a broken leg, and so they harvested that lamb.
Mm-hmm.
And so I traded. It's funny. I traded for that lamb with something of ours. I want to say we gave them 12 dozen eggs or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, that happens out there in the country. Your neighbors are growing this, and you're growing that, and you just do a little horse trading, and it's...
That's kind of wonderful.
It's awesome. It's
yeah.
awesome.
Super awesome.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the way it used to be.
And so how would you go about preparing a spring lamb?
Boy, there's so many ways, right? If they're super tiny, then you just want to just do a quick grill on them. I mean, but that's this one was 6 weeks, so it wasn't super tiny. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like just a milk-fed lamb at this point. Maybe 12 weeks. I can't remember how old it was at the time. But you just simply break it like you would any sort of lamb, mm-hmm. and you cook the legs separate. You cook the rack of the ribs separate, the shanks separate. And then
the reason Tom is separating is because when it's that young and tender, the center cuts are going to be very fast cooking.
I mean, super fast. You almost want to eat them raw in a funny way. Yeah.
Super fast and tender, so it goes really quick. You need to have a very hot grill, and then, of course, for the back legs, you know, it's going to take much longer to cook. Mm-hmm. So you want to be a little bit lower heat and, you know, make sure you're more careful about that one.
But there's nothing quite like putting a whole lamb on a spit in the summertime and doing a mop of vinegar and garlic.
That's
and
a few more
Greek oregano
later,
and that sort of thing. That's more like a seven-month harvest on the lamb. So,
Terry, I think about your bucolic beginnings as being a kid in France. And was there any kind of classic dish that you had growing up during the springtime?
The rabbit is always the one that comes to mind.
Yeah.
Mom on Sunday cutting the rabbit and first killing mom. Well, yeah, so we had to get the rabbit ready, then cutting into pieces, and then brown butter. We were talking about brown butter earlier. That goes, all the pieces goes in there, nicely colored, and then add the carrots, pearl onion or small onion, shallots, garlic, fresh thyme from the garden, and fresh bay leaf. All that stuff goes in there. Some cheap muscadet, dry white wine. Put that in there, and then cover the whole thing in the pressure cooker. 20 minutes later, you get a beautiful rabbit that's cooked, ready to go, with some noodles on the side, some beautiful egg noodles, and oh.
Did your mom ever break down and, like, buy a noodle, or did she always make those too?
Oh, no. She never made a noodle in her life.
Oh, really?
Oh, well, there we go.
She's always bought the noodle.
Good. I thought she was just going to be, like, Miss Perfect on everything.
No. My mom's never made pasta.
Okay, next up, what's in your fridge? That's what we want to know. Not just a freshly stocked fridge, but something that you might not consider dinner that we would. On Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. All right, it's the Seattle Kitchen Show. We're standing here right in the middle of it at the Hot Stove Society. And we're going to talk for a few minutes about salvaging a meal out of your fridge. And this isn't something, as I like to say, anyone can go to the grocery store and then load their fridge with a bunch of stuff. This is the idea behind this is to take something that you don't perceive as usable for a meal and making a meal out of it. And I think Chef Terry, you used to do this segment on KUOW quite often, right?
Yeah, What's Left in Your Fridge was a very, very popular show. And I think people are always in their head. They would love to be able to be as, you know, thinking and as thoughtful as we can be. We have a little bit of advance on them because we do this every single day. Mm-hmm. I mean, the game of a chef is to not waste any food, number one. You know, you buy the best food you can find, but you also try to not waste anything. Mm-hmm. And that's part of what's left in your fridge. You go and you walk in and you go, okay, I'm going to be making a special for tomorrow. What are we going to make? Mm-hmm. And you go, okay, I got a little bit of this, a little bit of that. So you start putting the dish together. Mm-hmm. And that's how we work in the restaurant business. You know, at home, people very often will be intimidated by the, what can I do with that? You know, they start with a dream. They're in a restaurant. They got a little bit of leftovers of some braised lamb shank, and they bring it home, and they put it in their fridge. And many times, they look at it for a day, 2 days, 3 days, and then they feel like, okay, it's okay, now I can put it in the garbage. You know, instead of, I got a half an onion, I got a half a lemon, I got a little piece of ribs, I got one carrot left, you know. Just make a quick little sauté of all that stuff, add the ribs, and you get a wonderful dish on your hand.
Also, sometimes you just don't want to go to the grocery store. You've had a long day, and so you got to work with what you've got. We asked our live audience here if anyone had a fridge that they would like to share, and Janet has been brave enough and bold enough to let us into her life vis-a-vis her refrigerator. Janet, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
No, Janet,
good to be here.
Janet, you know the rule. Don't make up anything because we're going to go to your house and check it out.
Okay. All right. Janet, what do you have in your fridge?
This is apropos because I don't know what's for dinner tonight.
Oh, good.
So I have lots of lemon, spinach, bib lettuce, broccoli that really needs to be used up, one fennel, carrots, celery, half a cup of buttermilk. Did I say raspberries?
Wow. Oh, with the local, of course.
And goat cheese. And a cup of ham.
And a cup of ham.
Ooh. How's that?
Did you go to the salad bar at Ballard Market or something? How did you end up with a cup of ham?
Okay.
I like
my fridge has a couple of hams.
So I have a question. Are you good at making a quick salty dough, like a pastry dough? Do you have butter? Do you have
like
eggs?
A biscuit dough?
I have butter and
like a biscuit dough or like a quiche dough is what I'm looking
for.
Okay. Because you could make a wonderful quiche with all these items here. You roast your, you know, while you're making your dough, you roast, you put your broccoli in the oven at very high heat, 450 degrees, get those really nice and crispy on the outside. And then the rest of your vegetables, I would just dice and saute quickly, put that with the broccoli, put that in the bottom of your pie pan, you know, after your dough is, and your dough you want to do a par-bake. Par-bake means you're going to put it in the oven for about 15 minutes, so your dough actually does all the shrinking and all that stuff it needs to do. And then before it comes out of the oven, I would take a little bit of egg white, mix it together, and brush that on the bottom of your pie dough because it will fill up all the holes. Ooh. So you won't have any leakage in your top.
Okay.
Little trick of the trade there. It's the glue of the kitchen. So anyway, you put your batter, so eggs, cream, milk, a little bit of ground clove and cinnamon, but just a dash, not just to have a little hint of flavor, salt and pepper, put that, mix that together, so that's your batter, and then all your vegetable put in the bottom of your quiche pan, put your batter right on top of that, put it in the oven. The biggest secret of a quiche, don't boil it. Otherwise, it will curdle and break, separate and full of bubbles. Not so good, right? Now, if you don't have time to make a dough, I would just use a Pyrex pan, butter it, and do exactly the same thing. It will be a crustless quiche.
Okay,
there you go.
All right. Thank you, Janet.
Thanks, Janet.
Thank you.
That sounds good.
Throwing some cheese, too, where you had it.
She had some goat cheese.
She had some goat cheese. Goat cheese will
more do. Cheese, more cheese.
All right. This fridge comes from our Facebook page. It's from K. Robin Egger, and this is for you, Tom. Ground beef, half a head of cabbage, red and orange peppers, carrots, spinach, tomatoes, rhubarb, milk, peach yogurt, cottage cheese, eggs, chicken stock, and the regular pantry staples. And she says this has to feed two kids and two adults, so dinner for four.
Can I see your list there for one second?
Sure.
I'm a little... you started with ground beef and cabbage, and that just immediately said to me something like a shepherd's pie, or mm-hmm. I don't know if there's some mashed potato available. What is bubble and squeak? Isn't bubble and squeak when you use mashed potato
and cabbage
together?
Uh-huh, and you fry it in a pan until it's crunchy and bubbly and squeaky.
Yeah,
I'm guessing.
Yeah. So I like that idea with a little sloppy joe on top or some sort of something in that neighborhood. Some of the other things, you know, frankly, the peach yogurt. Let's have that for breakfast the next day. Cottage cheese, we don't need it with the burger. I don't know what kids, you know, it's been so long since I've had a little kid in my mm-hmm. house to know exactly what they would eat. I think that cabbage and beef and doing something like a shepherd's pie would be creamy and delicious and a surprise for them.
I
think
they'd
eat it.
Okay,
yeah.
I think they would eat it too. I'm sure the adults would love it for sure. All right, Terry. Here's your next fridge. This comes from Cher Berg Garfield. She's got some citrus here, two lemons and limes, red onion, scallion, one head of butter lettuce, a half a pound of cheddar, a half a pound of pepper jack, one red bell pepper, one orange bell pepper, one package of burrito-sized wheat tortillas, tomatoes, chili sauce. Oh, my gosh, there's even
all right.
more. There's a lot of things.
So it's all vegetarian.
Let's see. That half
I'm gonna
of it
make
is.
A nice little...
She's also got some bacon and chicken breast and all sorts of things. So
well, I'm going to make a vegetarian salad just with the red onion. I'm going to take the red onion and macerate them in white wine vinegar for about 10 minutes with a little bit of salt, just a tiny bit of salt mm-hmm. in there. So then I have that salad on the side, and then I'll take the bell peppers, the lettuce, and everything, super slice, very thin, make a beautiful salad, compose it together, and finish it with the red onion. Macerated red onion right on top of that, olive oil, salt, pepper in the rest of the vegetable, and some fresh herbs, lots of it. She probably have cilantro or basil or anything like this, I would guess. If she doesn't, it doesn't matter. You can make a citrus dressing and put that right on top of your salad. So, because you have lots of citrus, Dijon mustard, citrus juice, olive oil, and canola oil. Put that on top of your lettuce, and you've got a wonderful little salad.
Yummy. She needs some of that. You know, when we started this segment, she needs some of that leftover lamb shank that you had.
No, but she also, the tacos, and she not the tacos, the tortillas she has, I would just fry them quickly, julienne them, fry them, and use that as a crunchy garnish on top of your salad.
Everyone likes fried tortilla strips. Mm-hmm.
Who doesn't like fried tortillas?
Everyone likes fried tortilla
Everyone
strips.
Everyone likes fried tortilla
Turns out.
Chips.
Or wonton wraps, you name it.
Yeah.
All right. Up next, we're hosting a dinner party, except we're cooking, Chef Terry and I, and Katie O is doing all the hosting on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. It's time for a dinner party here at Cairo Radio. We're going to move it on to Katie O's house. Terry and I are going to cook, and Katie's going to host it. Invite somebody that we want to cook for.
Yes, this was an interesting suggestion. We always have a special guest, but Sarah suggested that we invite the cast from the Avengers movie Infinity War. Is this because you saw this movie recently?
I have not seen it, but it's got every single person who is a celebrity currently in it.
That's true.
So it seems like a good way to just force all of them to come to your home.
I'm sure they're on their media tour right now, so they're probably hungry. They can stop over in Seattle and come, and you guys can cook for them. Does that sound?
So do you have a favorite of the Infinity cast? Is there one super warrior that you prefer?
See. Lupita Nyong'o. I think she's in it. She was in Black Panther.
Uh-huh.
She's great.
Okay.
So let's go with her.
All right.
All right. Very nice choice.
Because frankly, we don't have enough food for all of them. Yeah. Especially the big dudes like Hulk.
Yeah, and we're going to have to move this out of my apartment somewhere else. We can only accommodate four people at a time in that apartment.
You can do one Hulk.
But let's do this dinner party as we normally do. We take one ingredient, and then we use it in every single course. Mm-hmm. We were just talking about all the delicious spring vegetables that are out, and we're going to use radishes this time. Mm-hmm. Radishes in every single course. So who would like to kick it off with the appetizer cocktail portion?
I'm going to go.
Okay.
Radish. You don't mind.
I don't mind, not even a little bit.
I want some ice cold aquavit.
Yes.
I mean, ice cold. Glass frozen, aquavit frozen. Aquavit is typically a Danish liquor, mm-hmm. Often caraway flavored. There's a good aquavit company in Ballard called the Old Ballard Aquavit Company, I want to say. And so I'm going to get some of that, freeze the heck out of it so that it's so cold that it comes out of the bottle almost like syrup.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'm going to serve it with. The perfect, perfect spring radish. So that means that it's a tiny little head. It's still got a little spice, but not too much. And the green is edible. Like, the green is in perfect shape.
Just a tender little
shape. And then we're going to do it with a little smoked salt butter. Just dip it in. And then we're going to have radishes and ice-cold aquavit.
Yum.
Wow, that was
nice.
Delicious. I'm already there.
Would you have some of that?
Absolutely.
Okay, what about Lupino?
I think
Lupina.
Lupita, I think, would love it.
Lupita.
Yes, we're
like
friends.
Like the bread.
Yeah.
Lupita.
Okay.
Lupita bread.
Like the bread, but more famously the actress, I would say. All right. Mr. Rotaro, what's your
I think you know, something very fashionable right now, tartines and toast and so on and so forth. I think an avocado toast with some beautiful, first the toast in a hot pan with olive oil, a little bit of rubbed garlic, and then avocado puree right on top of this, a little bit of citrus, and then sliced radishes right on top of that, or julienne, one of the two. And those radishes have been pickled. So the pickle is 3-2-1, three waters, two vinegar, one mm-hmm. sugar, and a little bit of spices in there. You pick juniper, I like this idea. And then pickle your radishes instantly. In that brine, and then put that right on top of your avocado toast. And I think that would be a nice little toast to start the dinner with.
It does sound nice.
It does. And it's so courant that it's almost...
Avant-garde.
No, almost. Avant-garde is this past avant-garde
yeah,
avocado
past avant-garde,
toast.
Yeah,
but it's very...
We've done the avant. We're just on the guard.
I don't know if it's still trending up or if it's plateaued. Is avocado toast still
plateaued.
Trending up? Or has it
it's still seemingly a lot of places.
A lot of places.
You can definitely get some avocado toast. Okay, Tom, we've got some big
dudes.
Can you
say that again? Tom.
We've got some big dudes in this group. Are you going to bring something meaty to the table with these radishes?
Bring on the meat.
I'm bringing big radishes.
Okay. that's what we always say about Tom, big radishes.
Tom, big radish Douglas, you bet.
That's right. That's what we all say.
So daikon?
I'm bringing legs of daikon.
Yes. Hey, I see what you did there.
Yes, you see what I did.
I see. I love
those big daikon radishes. They're so meaty and delicious, and I don't know that they're out yet right now, but they grow super fast like cucumbers do when they're ready to go. But so I like the big daikon radishes, or the big white root that you see in the grocery store. I like to peel them, cut them in maybe 4-inch logs. So typically a daikon radish is about, what, 2.5 inches around, cut them in a 4-inch log, and then I like to braise them. Love to braise daikon radish.
They really do hold nicely to a long
I know.
Time.
So you could go meaty, since we have the Hulk and all his buddies are outside waiting to get into the house, and Lupita the Bread is going to be our special guest. I like either braising in a beef broth, or if you want to go vegetarian, you can just do in a shoyu broth of some sort. Mm-hmm. But I like that, just treating it like a roast, treating it like a lamb shank. You're going to braise it in much the same way, low and slow. You don't want to take it too far that it falls apart, but you want to take it far enough so that when you can take a little fork and just go right through it. Right?
And you could even put sliced onion on the bottom of that pan. That would be delicious, too.
I guess you could.
Yeah, I mean, you could.
Are you taking my dish now, Chef?
No. I'm embellishing it.
Oh, you're embellishing. So, I've never served sliced daikon radish with tongue, but sounds tasty to me.
Very much indeed. All right.
And then roasted shiitakes or some sort of unctuous food to go with that.
So, what are you going to serve for meat on that?
I'm not.
He's going vegetarian. Just that.
Or if you want to go meaty, you braise it in a beef broth.
Right.
But you don't need meat.
Okay.
All right.
So we're going to have to go cheese and radishes because I was thinking in my head, what can I make with chocolate and radishes? But that didn't work out. So goat cheese, maybe just a little goat cheese salad because we've been on the vegetarian bean. So a goat cheese salad with some radishes. I mean, I would do the radishes. I would probably, how would I make those so different? I probably would spice them up. So I probably would put a little bit of harissa. I haven't used harissa in a few weeks on this show, so I'm going to use it again. So I got a new batch in. Harissa, radishes, a little bit of argan oil, you know, some kind of a nutty oil. Mm-hmm. So you get that nuttiness added to that. Put lots of fresh herbs, chives, tarragon, all that stuff mixed with the radishes. And then put that on top of a little bit of a goat cheese. You make like a goat cheese, breakdown goat cheese on a plate. Put the radishes right on top of that. Or put the whole thing into a little pie shell. You could do a savory pie shell and then put that right into it. And then serve it as a little tart.
Yum. Sarah, what do you think? Do you think the cast of the Avengers would like this radish-themed meal?
I think they will love it.
You think Lupita liked the bread?
Yeah.
It was good?
Yeah, all that bread.
And Terry plays the drums. He can do the music, and I will sing.
Exactly.
Perfect. I cannot
what
wait
song,
for
what
this
song
party.
Is that? What was the song in, what's the song in the Avengers?
I wouldn't have a clue.
I don't think there is an Avengers song.
I think you're going to make one.
Yeah.
I'm going to sing Hello Dolly. Summer tips on grilling the best way possible on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. It's the Seattle Kitchen Show. Welcome back. You know, one of the best parts about doing the Seattle Kitchen Show at the Hot Stove Society here is the in-between our segments, we have a nice time with our audience.
That's right.
They get to know us in a whole different way.
The unedited version of this show, which is sometimes a little bit more bawdy than you would think.
It's as in B-A-W-D-Y?
That's right.
Oh.
Yeah.
Because I have a lot more bawdy than you might think. B-L-D-Y.
More to give.
More to love.
All right. We're going to fire up the grill for summertime. Some tips and tricks to make you more successful. I'm going to jump right in because I did just write an article. Yes, I can write.
Yes, we know.
I write a monthly column for Alaska Airlines magazine, but I did just write an article for Fine Cooking magazine, all about cooking fish on the grill this coming summer. It's the July edition, and they actually paid me to write it, which is something the Alaska magazine does not do.
You get something else in exchange.
Yes, that's true.
Yeah, those free flights are good.
anyway, so In that article, I focus on the edge of your fire. Because, you know, there's a couple of things about your fire. So, gas or charcoal, chef?
Mm-hmm. Charcoal.
Charcoal. I'm a charcoal guy. Even on gas, though, there's an you can create an edge to your fire, right? So the way I talk about that is I try to put my heat in one area. And so on a charcoal grill, like say you have a kettle, I'll build for grilling fish, I'll build my fire right in the center of the kettle.
Mm-hmm.
And so now my edge goes all the way around the outside of that fire, right? And I can work my fish from the outside edge, the coolest part, towards the inside edge, the hottest part, and kind of get a feel for where I want to be. And so, but I think recognizing that edge of flame, because if I'm going straight over the fire, I'm going to incinerate my fish.
Correct.
If I'm going to the cold side, I'm not going to get a nice sear on it, right?
Correct.
So I have to find that sweet spot of the edge. And I do it in the center so that I have a lot of room all the way around the fire. Because I just push my coals, like you would say in indirect cooking. You push all your coals to one side.
Oh, in those baskets if you have them.
Yeah, you have no, there's very little edge. There's very little place to grill your fish that's kind of somewhere in between. So that's why I call it the edge. And then the other trick when you're cooking fish is to kind of set it and forget it. Once you put on there, right, you've cleaned your grill, you've oiled the grill, you've oiled your fish, not too much because you don't want it dripping oil and creating soot.
Right.
But you put it on that grate, and you have to leave it alone.
Oh, but it's so tempting.
I know. You just want to
really
lift it up and see
how's
your mark looking. And then all of a sudden, what do you see? Your mark is on the grill.
Right.
It's the piece of seared fish is stuck to the grate.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what you want to avoid, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think also another point is to make sure you wait till your grill, I mean, you're cleaning your grill, you're oiling your grill, close the lid, let it get back up on temperature so your grill, because the minute you open your grill, your barbecue, I mean, the heat goes out. It's not a secret. You need to make sure that your grill is super, super hot, because by the time you open the, by the time you open the lid, you want to make sure that those actually, at those area, there's a very hot area in the middle. And those areas on the side are still hot enough to cook.
Hot enough, yeah. But as soon as you get it super hot again, you've lost your seasoning on your grate. That's the only thing I would say about super hot. And then it's fine for steaks.
Yeah.
Or, you know, pork chops or whatever. But if you're grilling fish, then you have to be careful in that area.
Right. You should oil it just before you put the fish into it. So
yes.
Can I bring it back just a second here, which is that we're at the precipice of grilling season, really. And there are some folks out there that may not own a grill yet. What is your thoughts on gas versus charcoal versus smokers? Tom, I feel like you have quite a few grills at your disposal. Terry, I know you love to grill, too.
I have the Egg, and I have a 22-inch Weber.
22-inch Weber. Mm-hmm. Tom, what are you working with?
I'm working with the Weber Summit Charcoal. So there's a Weber Summit Gas, and there's a Weber Summit Charcoal. And it's the most expensive grill I've ever bought. It was $2,000. But it is super solid. I'm expecting it to be a 20-year grill. So that's $100 a year.
And you grill a lot.
And I grill
a lot.
You grill
a lot.
Yeah.
And you
And
both...
it's spectacular.
And it's
I just will say. It is spectacular. I mean, it's got a 1-inch thick wall, unlike the other Webers out there. This one is built more like the Green Egg.
Right.
So it's got a 1-inch thick wall. It's got a diffuser plate. So when you want to smoke, you can put this little plate down, and it forces the smoke to the side and billows around your product.
Mm.
It's got, of course, a rotisserie. It's got a different grate, so you can bring up the coals. One of the problems with Weber's in the past.
It's the Cadillac of the grill.
It is a Cadillac of the Weber grill.
It's
so,
not.
But, and I will say, you know, I didn't pay the $2,000 because I got it as a sample grill. They wanted it back when they loaned it to me because they wanted me to try it and then give them a response. And I said, hello, I'm not responding unless you give me the grill.
That's how much you loved it.
You can have the grill back, but I'm not saying a word about it unless you give it to me.
Yeah.
Because I loved it. And I just...
And you had to figure out a way to keep that grill.
Absolutely.
You had to use all your wits about you to leverage the grill, basically.
And here's the good news. I was successful.
That's
good
the best
for
one.
You.
But so
I now have
people,
a bunch of friends that have bought it because I've had them to my house, and I always show it off, right, and blah, blah, blah. But so, it's a perfect grill.
So you're welcome, Weber.
Yes.
Ultimately. But there are people that want a gas grill. What is your take on the gas grill?
Well, I just saw one on TV, I want to say they're promoting it, that has a smoker box in it. So it's a typical gas grill, but there's kind of two chutes below the grate that you put wood chips into, and it creates a smoke. I'm cool with that. Or you put one of those little metal smoker boxes on top, and then if you're cooking with the lid down, it'll circulate some smoke in. Mm-hmm. That's really the only thing that I'm trying to get to.
And I also think the grate often is not necessarily great. I've seen some gas barbecue that had those white, very, very thin, wide grate that totally did not work very well for me in terms of cooking.
And they're too sharp of an edge, too.
Yeah.
So I like a rounded grate.
Yeah, absolutely.
A rounded grate.
Well, a gentle, basically.
A really sharp edge. It's hard to not have your crust stick to the fire, right?
Right. So, you know, good grate is important in your grill. If you do gas, you know, again, same as the coal, what I like to do when I use a gas one is to turn the entire thing on so it gets really hot, and then turn the two things in the middle, or two on one side. Then now you have heat still cooking on one side, and you have no contact with flames on the other side. So, because that's important when you put a piece of meat, especially if there's a little fat. Like I cook a lot of lamb. I love lamb. And, you know, lamb has a tendency to have a little bit more fat. So the rendering part, you don't want it to be over flame, because otherwise you definitely discuss your whole piece of meat is going to change in flavor. So,
unless you want to.
Like yeah.
Sometimes I'll take a prime rib and I'll let it catch fire and I'll burn the outside of the prime rib and let the inside stay rare.
Ooh. Then you remove that
like
or you
it.
Eat that?
No, I eat that. I kind of like it. I don't think it's necessarily the right thing to do, but that's happened in my life before. And the other thing I think it's important about the fire itself is if you don't have a fancy grill like mine, you know, it's charcoal, but it does have a little gas starter. Buy a $10 chimney.
Yeah, those chimneys are the best.
You put one piece of newspaper and light it up underneath your charcoal, and it lights up no problem at all.
And forget the lighter fluid.
Lighter fluid, please.
There's not one person I know of that thinks lighter fluid's a good idea, and yet when I go to the grocery, to the Lowe's or something like that, what's the biggest stack of charcoal out there? Match light.
Yeah.
Charcoal that is soaked literally to the bone. To the center in lighter fluid.
Right.
And it's just the grossest stuff. And I don't know why it's so popular.
It can't be good for you.
Well, I don't think charcoal is good for you in the first place.
Yeah.
That's probably true.
You know, so I don't know that.
Touché.
I would go down that path.
All right. I don't want to go down that path. I don't have science behind me.
Certainly lighter fluid. Up next, Chef Brock Johnson is here. We have an internal competition at our restaurant group where the chefs compete against each other. And Brock was the big winner. He now is the proud owner of the Colander Cup here on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. We are back in the Seattle kitchen. We have a large presence in our mess.
And our mess.
I'm Tom Douglas.
And I'm Terry Rotero, the chef in the hat.
And I'm Katie O.
And Chef Brock Johnson has joined us from the Dahlia Lounge. I was explaining a little bit before the break. We have an internal competition in our company. You know, there's 15 or 20 different chefs in our company, and they all like to kick each other's butt once in a while. And so sometimes it's the cooks that we challenge with a certain challenge, and then we come together over at our big pastry kitchen, and we have a particular challenge. Like the last one I want to say with the cooks was a to-go food item, and we gave them a certain to-go food container, and they each had to make something that was enticing enough for us to want to pick it up off the shelf and take it away and still compete with all other 17 restaurants in the same category.
Those are serious challenges.
Yeah, so it was...
It's a bit like Iron Chef in that way.
Mm-hmm.
Although I guess I suppose you know what the ingredients are to a certain extent, but it has that same sort of like, it's timed, there's some pressure,
right?
There's some very stiff competition.
Yes.
Who can make the best of the best?
So this time we invited all of our chefs, which they don't do this very often. Usually they're out supporting their team, but this time the chefs were out there with one of their sous chefs. And to come together, and because we're in the midst of this Pebble Mine battle, Trident Seafoods gave us a bunch of Bristol Bay sockeye salmon.
Mm-hmm.
So the chefs each got a whole sockeye salmon in the round.
Wow.
And they got to bring your own ingredients.
Yep.
And we had a few pantry ingredients there for them, and then we threw a couple of special things at them for extra points. So it was asparagus season, so we threw that in at the last second. None of them knew that was going to be there. And also, of course, we have our Rub with Love spice line. So you got extra points to use asparagus and extra points to use any one of our rub products in their dish that night. And so they had 30 minutes to complete this task.
It's a real fire.
And they were all gathered around the table. So they had all these chefs right next to them, across from them, around them. And so you have to keep a cool head. You have to keep your eye on the clock. And we staggered the start so that there was a group of chefs starting every 5 or 8 minutes or 10 minutes, something like that. So as some were starting, others were in the middle. And it was very confusing. And then you had to present 2 plates to the judges out at the judges' table. The judges included my wife, Jackie, from Prosser Farm, Chef Schwartz, the executive chef for the company, and Eric Tanaka, my partner and operator of the restaurants themselves.
So, some of the best palates in the biz.
There you go. Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So we're inviting Chef Brock here because he brought with him. If you want to see the Tommy D. Colander Cup trophy, just go to our Facebook page and you can get a picture. Sarah posted a picture there with Chef Brock. You brought home the prize.
Yep.
Congratulations, first of all.
Thank you. Yeah, I was involved in the very first Colander Cup. I'm looking at the trophy here. It was in October of 07. I remember that.
Wow. Really?
I was on the losing end. I was the chef at Lola at the time, and it was Best Burger. And it was Dahlia versus Lola. It was before we even did the entire company. It was just one restaurant would challenge another restaurant.
Oh, I see.
And, you know, there were some ridiculous things in that first Colander Cup. Mark Fuller, chef of Maono, owner of Maono now, and Supreme, he made cheeseburger soda. And it was kind of like right when molecular gastronomy was really kind of peaking, and it was pretty gross, but pretty
that
awesome.
Disgusting, but go on.
And that kind of whimsical perspective has kind of carried on throughout all of the Colander Cups. We get really creative. I mean, we've done spaghetti and meatballs. There was a tailgate theme 1 year. Mm-hmm. It was around the time of the Super Bowl. Mm-hmm.
Oh, that was a great year.
Yeah, we did terrines and galantines 1 year, a veggie competition, Baconopolis. So the Colander Cup has seen a lot of different challenges. We were excited to work with Bristol Bay Salmon. And actually, in preparation for this event, I had a Columbia River Springer on my hands, a whole beautiful fish, one of the first fresh salmon of the year. And I thought, okay, let's take a look at this salmon. And we started brainstorming, and we cut open the cheek of the salmon. And halibut cheeks, you know, have a cult following. People love them.
Sure.
But salmon cheek, on the other hand, I actually never had before. And once we got in there, we found this tiny little mussel, and it was kind of light pink. And as we sliced it and ate it like sashimi, had the texture of gooey duck, really kind of bouncy, and I found it super interesting. And from there, we said, hey, we're going to do nose-to-tail salmon. Mm-hmm. Start with the cheek and go all the way down to the tail. And that's what we did. We kind of broke it down. We did the belly, loin, collar, and tail, all with kind of a different preparation.
Were you freaked out when your salmon came and it didn't have a head on it?
Well, yeah, a little bit, but I had prepared because So I'd talked to Team Marketing and Schwartz, one of our executive chefs, and he had assured me that the head was going to be on.
This is Iron Chef 101.
Yeah, exactly.
I assure you it's coming with wings. Right. And you're like, yeah, right.
So the day of the event, I kind of quadruple checked and, of course, found out that there wasn't going to be a head. So we stuck with our plan, but just kind of shifted a little bit. We ended up doing, instead of the cheek, we did a kind of a raw salmon tartare, but we served it on a crispy piece of skin.
Nice.
It was delicious.
Sounds delicious. Yeah. What's the biggest challenge? I mean, you're a professional. You've been in kitchens for such a long time, as proven by the fact that you were at a Colander Cup 11 years ago with Tom.
Yeah, yeah.
But what do you find kind of like exhilarating and equally challenging when you're in that competition setting?
Well, I mean, you have to get the judge's attention, but you can't overdo it, right? So it's kind of this blend of having this perfect idea. Back when we did Baconopolis, we decided to go really huge, and we built this structure and did a carnival theme. Everybody was dressed up, and we had a cotton candy machine going. We had bacon ice cream, and we just went all out, and that got the judges' attention. This time, I tried to kind of keep it simple and do a dish representative of Dahlia. And Dahlia always goes back to Prosser Farm. That's our roots. So on every preparation of this nose-to-tail salmon, we used a Prosser ingredient, some that were fresh from this spring and others that we had preserved from last summer, like tomato vinegar and shishito pepper powder. So bringing that together was, I don't know, pretty exhilarating for me, and I think it definitely got the judges' attention.
I was going to say, one chef in particular I'm sure was very impressed by this, which is Jackie, who runs the farm.
Yeah, that worked out. I didn't know she was going to be a judge, but that worked out.
You definitely were playing to your audience.
That's cool, buying out the judge there.
Yeah, that's sure. She was a last-minute replacement judge, and that worked out great for Brock.
Yeah,
I think you just never know. You just never know.
In a scenario like that, you brought your sous chef, Regina.
Mm-hmm.
What do you rely on the sous chef for? It's almost like a microcosm of the everyday, right?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and she did a great job that evening. We'd planned kind of what we wanted to do, but she was a runner. I was able to kind of keep my wits about me at the station. That was the goal, that I was going to try to stay calm right at the station, and she was going to be the one running around. And when you know, little small problems happened, she would just deal with them. And
yeah, when that partnership works, it's a very beautiful, beautiful dance.
Yeah,
so that's what happens day to day.
Exactly what happened. Yeah,
absolutely. Also, when we threw the secret, or you guys threw the secret ingredient at us, Washington asparagus, kind of first of the season from the state, we were told we were going to get extra points for using asparagus, and we hadn't incorporated it into our dish prior, so. We had 5 minutes, and Regina and I were able to kind of chat back and forth and bounce ideas off of one another. And really what we thought up was inspired by Dan Barber. As the story goes, Dan Barber got really huge as a chef right after he did a menu with all asparagus. Mm-hmm. So the story goes that someone ordered too much asparagus. He was upset because they had 20 cases in the restaurant, and he said, "We're going to serve asparagus on every single dish tonight."
It's a lot of asparagus.
And the food writer came in and, you know, he got popular just off of that one asparagus menu. And as Regina and I are chatting, we're like, "Let's just put asparagus on every single dish, all five of our bites.
Uh-huh.
We're going to pickle it. We're going to smash it. We're going to char it. And we're going to, you know, do something else." And so every one of our bites had asparagus.
Well, that's cool.
That was fun.
Yeah.
So just a reminder, Brock had 30 minutes to take a salmon from the round, make five dishes, now add a secret ingredient back to all five, and get it to the judges' table.
Yeah.
With two completed plates.
Well, it was like you when you did Iron Chef, there was some practice involved, right?
Mm-hmm.
So we had practiced a couple of times what we were going to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember you had done the same, and someone asked me.
We practice with the ingredients that, you know, we practice with a fish, with a meat, and with a vegetable as our main, so that we could have a plan. Even if it was halibut instead of salmon, we had a plan for fish.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what I when we've done the black box challenges, you know, myself or my staff, you go into a black box challenge, have a few ideas,
mm-hmm.
of what it's going to be beforehand. You can't just come up with something on the fly. It's good to have some sort of thought on what you want to do.
All right, that's Brock.
Congratulations.
Can we talk you into staying for one more segment?
Sure, yeah.
All right, we're going to ask Brock to join us in the Food for Thought Tasty Trivia Challenge Corner on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. Seattle Kitchen on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM. It's time for Food for Thought Tasty Trivia. The audience doesn't want to clap anymore. They're sandwiched. They're sated.
Chef Brock Johnson from the Dahlia Lounge has graciously decided to stick around and play our trivia game. Brock, you played this before,
I
yes?
Have, yeah.
Yeah, you kind of had a,
have you won?
A little bit of
I'm
a
not
sigh
sure
when,
won,
you,
actually.
Yeah,
maybe
when
once.
You when you realized you had to stay. Earlier in the show, Janet came up and let us know what was in her fridge. So we'll be playing for her today. And what that means is each of you are going to get five questions, and whoever loses, whoever gets the least amount correct, has to give something to Janet. Tom, what will you give away should you lose today?
I'll give something from the Palace Kitchen.
Lovely.
Yeah, Palace Kitchen's got a new menu coming out the 1st of May. It'll be fun to go check that out and have a good... have a good dinner for $100.
All right. Terry Retro, if you lose, what will you give away?
I think I'm going to have Janet come to Luke for brunch. Brunch for two at Luke.
Okay. Brock, if you lose today, what will you give away?
Let's do something from the retail bakery at Dahlia. Let's do kind of like a to-go lunch for four with sandwiches and salads and cookies.
Yummy. That sounds
delicious.
Great. All right, Tier Rocho, you are up first.
All right, let's go.
All right, your first question. To scald milk is to heat until it boils, heat just below boiling, pass under a broiler, or mix in a little boiling water.
Heat just before it boils.
That is correct. Very nice. Your second question. A famous French dish is blanquette de veau. Veau is veal, but what is blanquette?
It's a stew. It's a veal stew that is white, made with cream, veal stock, clear veal stock, and mushroom and onions and veal neck and shoulder.
You really knocked that one out of the park. Good job. You are
just
correct.
So you know, that was one of the dish that I had as a test after 2 years of apprenticeship. One of the dish I had to make that dish. Blanquette de veau.
You didn't choke on your croak, did you?
No, I did very well.
He always tries to bring that up. I'm so sorry.
No, it's okay.
Okay, your third question. To a winemaker, racking a wine means to A, transfer it into another barrel, B, store bottles in a rack, C, age in a cask or barrel, or D, clarify it by filtering.
I'm going to go with the clarifying by filtering.
It's actually A, transfer into another barrel.
That makes way too much sense.
Yeah, it's way too much sense.
I thought racking was like, what's the term when you remove the... never mind.
You're doing great, though. 2 out of 3, here's your fourth question. In picking grapes for wine, it is essential that the grapes reach the winery, A, with their skins intact, B, absolutely dry, C, without exposure to sun, or D, at night.
All of these are actually almost true, except for one, but the skin definitely needs to be intact.
That is correct. Very nice. And your final question, Thierry Rotero, how do chefs keep cooked green vegetables green?
You shuck them.
That is correct. That is very nice. That is 4 out of 5.
That is dropping in ice water.
Fabulous job today.
You're very welcome. Next, Brock, you're up.
Brock?
4 out of 5.
Your first question, how much time should you allow for a 12-pound frozen turkey to thaw in the refrigerator? I'll give you some options. 16 hours, 24 hours, 32 hours, or 48 hours.
Until it's thaw out.
Exactly. Let's go 24 hours.
It's actually 48.
Yeah, I would give more. Probably more.
48.
That makes sense.
Your next question, Brock. How do you know if a brine is salty enough to cure meat or fish? I'll give you some options here again. It makes your lips pucker. It will draw water from an eggplant. An egg will float in it, or it will uncurl a sliver of scallion.
I've never heard of any of those.
Me neither. Your guess is...
I got a fifth one. Put your finger in there and taste it.
Yeah. And there's a sixth one. 1 cup of salt per gallon of
liquid.
Here
we go.
I'm going to give you it. I mean, honestly.
It's an egg.
It's an egg. But I'm going to give it to you.
Came out so easy.
I know. I like Brock, though. He's a guest. I want to give him the answer. He's very smart.
Now I know how she feels about me.
It's different. It's different between you and I. All right, Brock. Professional chefs use this to peel ginger. Is it a European vegetable peeler? Is it a utility knife? Is it an ordinary teaspoon? Or is it D, a long fingernail of thumb?
We're going to go an ordinary teaspoon.
That is correct. Very nice. Your fourth question. Proper way to cut a round cheese is to wrap in a napkin and chisel cut wedges. Use a broad spoon to scoop off the top. C, in radial wedges like a pie. Or D, remove rind entirely, then cube.
We're going to go with a pie because you always want to cut a cheese through the center.
Very nice. It is in radial wedges.
Radial wedges
like a pie.
Yep.
And your final question to see if you tie with Mr. Rotro. What is the hottest part of a chili pepper? Is it the flesh? Is it the seeds? Is it where the seeds attach to white spongy internal membranes? Or is it the stem?
It's the spongy internal membranes.
That is correct. Very nice. That's 4 out of 5.
What's tie, Brock?
You're tied with Thierry. Tom?
I'm sure I'll let these guys off the hook today.
Let's see. Let's just see about that. Your first question: what happens to an avocado when cooked? Does it produce bitter taste? Does it melts away to nothing? C, becomes very sweet? Or D, becomes poisonous?
I'm just going to say it's like all fat. It'll just melt away like foie gras.
It's actually A. I guess it produces bitter taste.
Mm. Well, I've done grilled avocados. Sure. I don't find that.
I guess we'll all have to give that a go again.
You're not going to give him that one, are you?
No.
I'm not buying
Rob,
that one either.
He's no you. Come on. All right. Tom, your second question. A beer brewer's process of germinating cereal grains and then quickly drying them before they can develop into plants is called A, brewing, B, hopping, C, malting, or D, priming.
C.
That is correct. It's called malting. Your third question. Jellyfish are very popular in Asian dishes. They taste like A, sweet like honey, B, nothing at all, C, salt, or D, sour pickers. Pickles. Sour pickers. Pickles.
I've had it. They only taste to me like whatever you put on them, so I'll just say like nothing.
That is correct. They taste like nothing. Your fourth question. This food was considered high status in 18th century America. Was it carrots, celery, radish, or watercress?
Well, watercress grows wild, so I don't imagine that was high society. I'm going to go with carrots.
It's actually celery.
Celery.
And people used to have glass or silver celery vases that were super popular. That's how much people love celery. Mm. All right, your final question, Tom. Which product is the lightest in weight? Is it heavy cream, light cream, milk, or all weigh the same?
Well, so the question is, does 16 ounces of milk weigh the same as 16 ounces of cream?
I think that's what we're asking.
It's a trick question, the feathers and the lead.
Well, volume. 16
by
ounces
volume.
Is liquid volume.
Mm-hmm.
So
volume is
so
not the same
wise,
as
I'm going to say milk weighs the most. I'm going counterintuitive.
Yeah, that's not how we're asking this question. What is the lightest in weight?
Oh, what's the lightest?
What's the lightest?
I'll say the cream.
There's heavy cream or light cream. Which one?
I would say heavy cream.
You are correct.
Wow.
We got there. Very nice,
nice.
Tom.
That was
what I was trying to say.
Unfortunately,
that was counterintuitive. Yeah.
That's still...
We don't really need to know who lost this one.
Okay. Janet, you know who to contact.
Okay. Congratulations, Janet. I'll be getting you a gift card soon. If you want to be part of our show, you can send us a note on Facebook or Twitter at Seattle Kitchen. You're listening to us on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM.
Thanks for listening.
Have a great weekend.